Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 300 speaker files, links for you to subscribe to the podcast, and a place where you can donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Matt.
My name is Matt, and I'm a compulsive overeater. For those of you who don't know me, I have 5 years of abstinence. I'm down 160 pounds from my top weight. I used to weigh 340 pounds. I was thinking about the title "Light a Candle," and like, where did that title come from? Like, "Light a Candle" meaning, like, why that? And I guess like the artsy person in me, I'm like, all I'm thinking is like, as long as there's just like a flicker of hope, like, as I'm so desperate. I'm so desperate to not compulsive. Sorry. There's so much shit going on in my life right now. I'm so desperate that as long as there's a flicker of hope, I can stay abstinent. And that's why I go to meetings, and that's why I call people, and that's why I sponsor, and that's why I stay abstinent, because the hope just, like, constantly builds on itself. And, like, the reason why, I was like, why am I so nervous tonight? Like, I share a lot, and I don't get nervous like this. And like, the thing is I've been with my wife for 7 years, and I've been abstinent for 5 years. And this is the first time I'm speaking where my wife and I have been married for a year and a half, and she's been in program with me, and we're separating. And this is the first meeting that I'm leading that it's about me being here, knowing that I'm not going home to anybody but myself. And that's new, and that's different, and it's scary. And at the same time, this program has taught me that anything that is uncomfortable is meant to build me and to help get me closer to my higher power. This program has taught me that the whole point of being uncomfortable is not for me to eat. The whole point of me being uncomfortable is so that I can stop and say, all right, what can I do differently? So I can say, all right, God, rather than me try to figure it out, God, what can I do? Because I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. August 1st, I'm going to be on my friend's couch. And I haven't thought past that. You know? But the difference is, as crazy as that sounds and as uncomfortable as it sounds, this program has taught me that for me and my experience, that is turning my life over to God. That is me making a decision. When I decided to stop eating certain foods, that was me making a decision to turn my life over to God. Because before that, the only thing that solved my problems and solved all the craziness was the eating. And it was the food. You know, like, I don't talk in this program, like, I don't talk much in my shares about, like, the way I was raised, because I feel like, for me, when I was new, I used all that as an excuse to, I cuss a lot, so this is really going to be hard not to cuss. I think the last time I shared, they probably had to cut half of it out. The food is easy. The food is an easy solution. Because it's there, it doesn't talk back to you, you do whatever you want with it. You know, it's like you can have sex with it and then it'll go home in the morning. You know, it's like, it'll just go. You know, but the whole point for me, it's like, I don't talk much about my family stuff here because the thing is, when I was new and even before program, that is why I ate. That's why I was a victim and I had every reason to eat. You know, but the whole point is because I've worked this program and I work the steps continuously and new things are always coming up, I don't eat over my family today. I can say, God bless them. God bless them. I may act out, I may get angry, I may cuss, but I'm not eating over it. And the whole point is, me at 340 pounds is not a helpful human being. It's just not. Me and my food, I'm not much use to anybody or myself. And, you know, like, I'll just, it's like, this is going out to the world, so I'll just, if this will help anyone who's new, when I come from an alcoholic household. My dad's an alcoholic. Andy was a minister. Explain that one to a kid growing up. Having to have this great idea of how you're supposed to look on the outside, but at home there's dishes baking and there's people getting hit or people being yelled at. You know, my brother was 6 years older than me. My dad never beat me. And so I used to feel like, why do I feel like I'm relating to all these people who talked about getting abused growing up? But like, the whole point is, my brother was 6 years older than me. He kind of raised me. And he was very violent and very, very angry. And And then I have a younger brother, so I was the middle kid, which we all have complexes if you're the middle kid to begin with. And, you know, my younger brother is 2 years younger than me and bipolar and had all these problems. And, you know, my mom is your classic Al-Anon, trying to solve my dad's problems and solve his alcoholism. And so, you know, for me, it's like I had it together. I never went to jail like my brothers. I never was in a mental institution. I'm the only one out of the five of us who's never been institutionalized. Really. Maybe I should be, though, you know. I'm sure there's plenty of reasons to put me there, but I've escaped that one. My mom went to the hospital for Al-Anonism, which I don't understand that. But, but the whole point is like, I was so self-righteous and thinking, you know what, I'm not using drugs, I'm not in jail, I'm doing good in school, I'm going to college, and I have it together. And I'm 340 pounds. And I was so self-righteous, and I thought I had everybody lit. And I'm going to tell you about you because I got my shit together, and I'm going to tell you why you do what you do, and I'm going to let you know about yourself. And the whole point is I knew I was crazy. When I went to college, like, I had lost weight in high school, and I was chewing and spitting food out, and every time I ate a cookie when I didn't want to, I would, you know, I was like, God, I ate the cookie, then I'd go and I'd exercise for an hour, and then, I mean, I knew the calories, and I did all that stuff, and it's like, it was insanity. It's like, I don't know why I brought this, but this was a journal that I had back in high school, and, I never really finished writing in it, but when I did write in it, it says, like, this is when I was starting to go to the gym. I said, I can be so lazy and stupid sometimes. Well, I've decided that I'm going to start getting up and going to the gym before school. I'm also going to work hard to eat right. I have to eat right. I'm coming so close to getting back to my old weight when I was thin. All I can do is ask God for the strength and do it. Well, I haven't followed through. This is the next day. Well, I haven't followed through with any of my promises. Every day I say I'll get up early. But here's the thing. It's like, when you wake up every day of your life, and you're like, tomorrow I'll do it, tomorrow I'll do it, tomorrow I'll do it. Then you wake up that next day, and you're like, why can't I do this? Why can't I do this? The big book talks about incomprehensible demoralization. That's what that is. Because every day I'm waking up and I'm telling myself I'm a failure. Because I have set these expectations of myself that I can't live up to. But the big book talks about an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. What does that mean? That means that I am not like a normal person when it comes to food. For you have the alcoholic who has to stay sober. For me, I'm a compulsive overeater. I have to stay abstinent. Abstinence for me is food sobriety. Nothing more, nothing less. I don't screw around with my abstinence. I'm abstinent. Is it perfect? No. But I know when I'm screwing around with food and when I'm not. You know? I will say that. And the whole thing is like, to wake up every day and to feel like you're a failure, and to wake up 340 pounds and to go to school in 7th grade and have everyone poke you and call you the Pillsbury Doughboy, or to have them grab your man boobs, or to do all these things that no one deserves to have done to them. You know, like, you get complexes growing up. The whole point is like, this is all just stuff from my past that, like, I work through on my inventories and you deal with. You know, I'm going to way all over the place. What happened to me was, like, I moved out to L.A., and I thought my life was going to happen the way I wanted it to. I thought I'd get the job I wanted. I thought all that stuff. And, you know, L.A. is not good to people when they first move here. I don't think anyone's had a good... L.A. is like that bad first date. You're like, I don't think I should go on that date again. But I'm stuck here now. And I cried on a job interview. I was like... But like, it sounds funny, but I was hitting my bottom. I would pay $10 to go park on City Walk, and I would go to every restaurant in there. Every restaurant. And just binged. You know, it's like, the whole thing is like, I come into these rooms so I can hear how crazy I am. I don't come into these rooms to hear how everyone's got it all together, because that's not why I need to stay. I need to stay because if I go out there and I forget you guys exist, I'll just go right back to the same old stuff. You know, so when I came out here, I had free housing through my school for a while, and I was helping out the school, and I was looking for a job, and something told me to buy a one-way plane ticket. Even then, something was working in my life, and I did it, and I bought a one-way plane ticket, and then when I was out here, and I couldn't find a job, and my free housing was ended, I had my rental car, and then I had a hotel room, and I still had enough money for another day's hotel room, but the food was fixing it. So I was spending the money that I needed to use for shelter on food. Like, the thing is, we make this discrepancy between compulsive overeater and alcoholic and this and that, but the point is, I will choose food over my own well-being. I will choose that feeling that I get when I eat. I will choose that high. It's a high. It's nothing more than I get so high. I know what to eat to put me to sleep. I know what to eat to wake me up. I know what to eat to make me not hear you, you know? And I know what to give you so you won't talk to me. You know, like, that's... You know, or we'll just eat it together, you know? Let's just... You know, I'm manipulative. I know how to get what I want. Because that food is so powerful. That need and that want to escape reality, because reality can be so painful. You know? So I was in a hotel room, and I started to go into program. I called someone, and I said, I knew about programming because my dad had he stopped drinking, and he had gone to AA, but he never really worked the program, so I knew what a dry drunk looked like. I just knew he was angry all the time, but I knew that there was something about 12 steps. So for whatever reason, I don't even remember hardly making the call, but I remember calling and saying, what do I need to bring? Do I need to bring anything? She goes, no, just bring yourself and know you're giving yourself the greatest gift you could ever give yourself. I think I'm emotional today because, everything I'm going through now is because of all these experiences I had early on in this program that gave me the gift of knowing that I'm going to be okay through anything I go through now. And that anything I go through now, because I stayed abstinent then, I've gotten to see the experience of going all the way through and knowing I'm okay. That's why, they say abstinence is the most important thing without exception. Not because, for me, this is from my experience, not because abstinence is the most important thing, but because the experience of staying abstinent through heavy shit is what it's about. That's the gift. That's why I stay abstinent. You know? So I started going to meetings, and I got a sponsor, and I did exactly what he told me to do. I did exactly what his food plan was. I didn't care. I just needed to not be thinking about the food. And basically, I got abstinent, and I got a job in an apartment within 2 weeks. And I didn't have to go on the streets. That's what my compulsive overeating bottom was going to mean. It can happen, man. Put me in a room with a bunch of drug addicts or alcoholics. I fit right in. You know? That's my experience. You know, I didn't get up to 340 pounds for no reason. You know, I'm now in Al-Anon and working that thing, and you know, I have a hard time talking about the stuff I went through growing up. Because I'm like, yeah, but they did the best they could. Yeah, but, I love them. Or, yeah, but it doesn't bother me anymore. He goes, it's not about blame. You know? And so I'm learning to actually look at things I went through, but not point. But to look at it as an experience that I went through and to see how it is that it forms me the way I am. You know, if you're new, you just keep coming back. You can think we're crazy. You may not like anything I say, but if I make you angry, that should make you want to come back and prove me wrong. You know what? If you don't like what I have to say, come next week and find a better speaker. And then you can say, that asshole last week, he was really bad. I challenge you. Because you know what? I know a lot of newcomers who come in here and they have all these questions, and my thing is it working for you now? Is what you're doing working for you? I have a sponsee who is in this room and he'll remain nameless, but one day he made the comment, goes, you're cocky. And I didn't know what to say back to him. I didn't say anything back to him. And I realized what it was, and it didn't bother me because I think I can come across that way, but... when it comes to the program, it's not my program, it's the program of Overeaters Anonymous. I am confident that if I am willing to go to any length, that I can recover. because the big book says that. And if I can give anyone that gift of sharing my experience, then I hope you can be as cocky as I am. Because I'm not cocky. I'm actually the most insecure person you'll ever meet. Before the meeting, I'm in the bathroom looking in the mirror and like, can you see what I look like? All that crap. You know, step two came to, you know, step one, we admit we're powerless over food and our lives become unmanageable. You know, it's like my life became unmanageable because I was trying to manage it all. Step two came to believe in a power greater than myself that can solve my problems. The way that worked for me is I came in these rooms and I met people who had lost hundreds of pounds and they were maintaining it. That to me is coming to believe in a power greater than myself. You know, I learned to find God in these rooms. I learned that there are people in here who went through life experiences and they didn't have to eat over them. You know, step three, made the decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. It's like, I have a hard time philosophically understanding steps one, two, and three, and all that stuff, but my whole thing is, like, one thing they said is when you don't believe that others believe. That's what people told me when I was doubting things in my life. And then, the answer is always in the next step. So if I'm powerless, then I need to come to believe in something bigger than myself. And then, okay, I've kind of come to believe in something bigger than myself, so what am I supposed to do with that? All right, maybe I need to make a decision to let that thing that I now believe in work in my life somehow. All right? And, like, for me, it's like so much of this is about learning to... Oh, wait, it's so fluffy, but I think it's true. Like, it's about learning to love yourself, you know? It's like step three, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Like, okay, to the care of God. I'm going to turn my life over to something else, trusting that it will have my best interest at heart. So the whole idea that if I've handed my life over to something loving, and the thing is like, one thing I do, like, you guys are not my God, but you guys have experiences better than my own. So I turn my trust over to the program. And then, you know what? My sponsor said, if someone's telling you what to do, and they're giving you advice rather than their experience, you ask them, what is your experience with that? And he said, and if they say they don't have anything, you can walk away. You know? And when I talk to sponsors, I try to always come from what is my experience. And if I can, I try to frame it around my experience. And if I don't, I'm like, you know what? Let me give you somebody's number who may be able to help you. Because I'm not the one to help you with this. You know? But let me know what they say, because chances are I'll come across this problem at some point in my life. So the whole thing, step three, made a decision. So what does that mean? These steps, it's a spiritual program. So how do I manifest... How do I manifest this program in a physical way? I have to manifest spirituality in a physical way so that I can go out there and live this program. You know, in step four, we made an inventory. You know, this whole idea of, you know, made a searching and fearless moral inventory. The whole idea that if I turn my life over to something bigger than myself that loves me, or even the program with people who generally want my best interest at heart because they're living this too, then you know what, man? I can be fearless. My inventory was like 50 pages long, and when I gave it away, I had my dog on there, I had my bird, I had this kid on there. Listen, this was actually one that I really had to argue with my sponsor about, because I wanted to write him a letter, and you didn't. In fifth grade, there was this kid sitting next to me, and I farted, and I blamed it on him. And I remember telling him, I was like, I really think I should write him a letter. I came into the program when I was 22, so I was younger than a lot of the other people and I was around, so my inventory is a little more juvenile. But I was like, I really think I should write him a letter, because I don't think you need to. I think he's forgotten about it. I didn't write him a letter, but. But the whole point is, like, I'm sharing this with you guys because, like, this is how stupid we get. Like, this is what it's, like, to me, like, this is what it's about. Like, it's not about how great I am. It's not even about how well I work the program. It's about how, like, I work the program and I stay abstinent no matter how stupid I look or how crazy I get, or maybe when I tell someone to F off and I stay abstinent and then I learn how to go back and clean it up. Like, it's really about living. You know, and like right now, I'm living through separating from my wife, and like I don't know what this looks like. Like I don't know what I'm doing. And now it's like people, you know, my response is, like, you have 5 years, you could pray and meditate. And I'm like, so I'm trying to pray and meditate. So like I did my inventory, and I put everything down on paper, my whole life. I talked about how I got touched inappropriately growing up. I talked about how, you know, my mom treated me. I talked about how my brothers treated me. I talked about my teachers. I talked about things that I did sexually, being 340 pounds. And let's just acknowledge that there's a lot of issues that we have for 100 pounds. I mean, I think anyone, body image and sex, I'm sorry, they go hand in hand. So ignore that in OA, man. You know, can't ignore that. And my sex inventory was long, and I've only had sex with one person. So. Can't believe I just said that. I don't know. Right? This would be like the light a candle speakers girl. He's like mad at 3 years, mad at 5 years. not much change. And so when I gave it, the whole point for me is like this program is about allowing myself to meet people and about having experiences. You know, when I say it's about having experiences, like I'm so tired of not living my life. You know, I'm so tired of not having a life. Like, I was dead. I was 340 pounds, and all I did was obsess about the food. And even when I got abstinent, the first 2 years, when I was at a healthy body weight, all I was concerned about was food and my image and how I looked, you know? But I stayed abstinent, you know? And I cried about it, and I talked to my sponsor about it, and I was in a job I didn't like for 4 years before I was able to leave it, you know? And when I gave away my inventory, the experience for me was my sponsor was a hardcore Catholic, and I'm not. And we went down before his church service on Sundays, and we would meet outside a church in Santa Monica. And everyone knew when I was giving away my four-step, because when I would come back to my home meeting, I had, like, sunburn on one side of my face. And it took me, like, a month to give my inventory away. And you know what? Like, I got reparented through that. Like, you know, there were things that I said that happened, and my sponsor was like, well, if I did that to you, would I still be your sponsor? And I said, no. He goes, well, then, you know, your family members shouldn't have done that to you either. You know, so I got to learn how to look at my life without adding on more resentment. You know? An honest appraisal of my life. And the whole point is, like, for me about the inventory, it's like we make a certain, you know, it's the big book talks about we take stock of the truth. Like, he's talking about it as if, you know, Bill is this business guy, and he's talking about we take inventory. Like, a business takes inventory. Why does a business take inventory? But to get rid of what's not working. But the whole point, like, take that a step further. It's like, why does this business have to take inventory? Why do I have to take inventory about what's working and what's not? And the only answer I can have is because I have something to offer. I have something to offer. And I don't know what that is. But I can help someone else. I can go out there with the desires of my heart and pursue my dreams and live my life. A business is there to offer a service. And if he's, to me, I was like, well, if he's comparing it to that kind of an inventory, then that means that there is something that I can provide to this world. And what I have to do is do my part and clean up what's not working. You know? And now step 6 and 7, which are like the, what is it, 6? We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character and humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. I mean, for me, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. I mean, when you sit down, you read your inventory, and then you have your part of everything, you're just like, oh, yeah, please, like, I can't live with this. But, like, you do. You still live with it. I still live with these character defects, you know, and I have to hit bottom with them, you know. I just came around on my second, this is how the program works for me. I just gave away my second 4-step. And my part in a lot of these things, you know, my sponsor is like, it's not cut and dry, but like for me, a lot of the things that were my part was how dependent, like I acted out on people, or I did this, or I did that, was because of my dependence. I have so much dependence on other people. My first inventory, it wasn't about that. It was about my fear, it was about this or about that. But like this, it came about how dependent I was on all these people. And then it's ironic that 2 months later, I'm getting separated from my wife. And I didn't ask for it. We went into that therapy session, and what came out was not the future I thought was going to happen. but we both made the choice. It wasn't like one of us said this or one of us said that. It was honestly just, I feel like, what is supposed to happen. But that, to me, is the program working in my life. The program, to me, is when I have to accept what's happening in my life and not take action on what I think is going to happen, but focus on what can I do today? What is my behavior today? You know? That's what it's... What can I do today to help my recovery? You know? And 7, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. I mean, for me, it's like, sometimes I may be in the middle of the incident where I'm about to tell someone off, and I don't. And I'm like, God, hold me back. That is humbly asking Him to remove my shortcoming. I just don't think there's a timetable to it. You know? Made a list of all persons we harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. So I made the list based off my inventory, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so and injure them or others. My sponsor's like, you are not going to do this alone, and we're going to do it together. So my sponsor had me sit down, and he had me write a letter to each person. And he goes, and you'll read the letter to them. You know? Or he said, strongly suggested that this is how I do it. You know, we don't tell each other what to do, but it's kind of like, if you want what I have and are willing to go to any length, you just shut up and you do it. Anything is better than my first thinking, you know? And the way we outlined the letter, he goes, you know, it's like even when we're in a meeting, 1 minute on the problem and 2 minutes on the solution. So for me, it was like 1 minute on, like, okay, this is what I did. I apologize. And then this is why I'm grateful you're in my life. And they're short. And they're like a paragraph, maybe two paragraphs. And those were the letters that I read to these people. And what I did was I went home. I was fully self-supporting. I had paid for my own plane ticket. I paid for a rental car. I stayed with my grandmother. And I went and met each of my family members, and I made amends to them. And to get to have the experience of, you know, my mom, she was like, can I keep the letter? I was like, no, you can't keep the letter. read my letter to my dad, and he broke down crying, and he was apologizing for his alcoholism. I said, Dad, you don't have to apologize. It's not your fault. You're an alcoholic. You have to do the work to have those moments. Because I can't force moments like that. He wanted to keep the letter. I said, no, you can't keep the letter. I made amends to my little brother, who was just like, yeah, I get it, you know. Good for you. I think you owe me some money. So I paid him back. And then my older brother, I couldn't find anywhere. Both my brothers have been, you know, dealing with drugs and stuff like that, and really heavy into drugs. And my brother, I kept trying to call him, and I couldn't find him. And my time was running up, and I had to get back to the hotel room or back to the airport and everything. And then I'm not sure if I was on the way to the airport or what, but I knew he worked at the airport. And I happened to catch him, and I had my letter. And when I saw him, I could tell he was pretty coked out, but he was there. And I knew, like, I just had to do my part. I just had to do my part. I said, Chris, just give me a minute. Just give me a minute. And I read him the letter, and I saw his eyes, and I said, you can keep the letter. And the thing is, it's like, I'm not this great person. I'm not. I'm a compulsive overeater who would rather eat, and I'd rather tell you what to do and cuss you out than have to deal with myself. Even at 5 years, I'm not this great person. I have a part in the fact that my wife and I are separating. I'm not a great guy. You know? She's going to deal with shit from my marriage that I caused. You know? But when I got on that airplane and I went home, like, the program is about, it's about having a spiritual experience, and, like, you can't force it, you know? But, like, I remember being on that plane, and I looked over the Grand Canyon, like, when we were driving over, and, like, the thought occurred to me, and it wasn't me, like, patting myself on the back. Like, the thought came to me, like, Matt, you did good. Like, Matt, you did good. And that, to me, is what making amends and, like, living a good life is about. And so I got to have this great spiritual experience. And then, you know, step 10, continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. That's saying, okay, you just had this great moment. Don't screw it up for yourself. You know, like, that's what step 10 means to me. Keep it clean. you know, and sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Like, I struggle with that, man. You know, I struggle with that because it's like, I get up in the morning, I feel like I have to go. I thought I was having a heart attack the other morning when I woke up. My heart was pounding so hard, you know. And then somebody told me, like, one of my, like, 10-step sponsors, he said, listening to somebody else is meditating. Because if you're not thinking about yourself, because that's good enough. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. That tells me my sponsor, when I was feeling like I can't have a life, or what if I have to do this rather than go to a meeting, and like, how do I balance life with program? He goes, that whole point of step 12 is to say you have a life. You go out there and you carry the message because we are the message. That's what the literature says. So that means I get to go out there and I get to be of service to the people in my life. Whether I'm working at my coffee shop job and this girl's having trouble and I listen to her problems and then I don't tell her what to do, but I share my experience. You know? Or when I ask a customer how they're doing. You know? There's been times where I've had to say, okay, I can't go to this meeting because I have this work thing. Or, oh, I have a friend that wants me to go here. You know, my sponsor taught me, like, that's okay. You know, we tried to carry the message to others. You know, practice these principles in all our affairs. And the whole point of having a spiritual awakening, every time I abstain, that is a spiritual experience. Because I am a hopeless case, man. The thing is, you know, we have all these billboards with all these diets on it, but none of them tell you how to maintain it. None of them. None of them tell you how to maintain it. You know, I talked to sponsees about food, and I remember my conversations about food, and I thought I was giving up everything when I got abstinent, because there's certain foods I don't eat, you know? One thing my sponsor said, he goes, abstinence is just the beginning. Abstinence is just the beginning. You know, I left that full-time job. My sponsor read We Agnostics to me all the way to work the day that I decided to quit. He goes, so are you going to turn your life over to God, or are you going to keep trying to annoy me with talking about how much you hate your job all the time? And I quit my job. And, you know, I'm pursuing my creative career. I'm not making money at it. I'm broke. And now I'm living on a friend's couch. I got to work on this amazing project for the past month. And if I take out my judgment of everything, I'm living my dream. And the truth is, I was feeling alone in my marriage. And my biggest fear is being alone. And this program has taught me that alone is a choice. You guys are my friends. You guys are my family. I don't feel comfortable calling my family right now. I can't. They can't help me with this. So my mom, I was separated from my wife. She goes, oh, we've never been through this before. I'm like, we aren't going through nothing. I'm the one who's separated. And then I need a lawyer. You know, it's like, I can't talk. I can't do this. People here are willing to give me the one thing they can't ever get back, and that's their time. And you know what? I don't know. I don't hang out with people in program. I'm so scared to open up to you guys because I don't want to get too comfortable. And I finally, when all this stuff went down, I was sitting at a Starbucks, and I called my one friend Colleen, and I was like, hey, just want to let you know, I'm going to be at the Starbucks, it's on, like, Ventura, and, you know, whatever, like, if you just want to, like, you know, stop by and say hi, I'll be there. I could not just say, will you come sit with me? And I was on the phone with my sponsor, and she showed up, and she just sat with me. Like, what a good life. What a good, good, good life. I don't have everything I want. I don't have the six-pack that I want, you know. Now I'm going to be single. I hope I can get a lot of women. You know, it's like, all this insecure stuff's coming up. Life is happening. And you know what? I get to live it. I get to live it abstinently. And I pray to God, I pray to God, I pray to God, please just let me stay abstinent through all this. Don't let me get cocky. Don't let me think that I'm doing this. Because I'm not. I'm really not. You guys give me this gift. You know? And the only way I can keep it is by remembering what it was like. That's all I can do. So, I guess I'm done if y'all want to ask me questions. how about that prayer meditation? What do I do? I could ask you the same question. When I was new, I just needed to get the tapes out of my head. Like my old, like whatever in my head, you're a piece of crap, all that negative, fear, all that just stuff. And I read so much spiritual literature. A lot of it was even outside literature. I didn't understand prayer and meditation. The simple thing is prayer is talking to God and meditation is listening to God. I keep it that simple. And what I try to do, try means, see my sponsor, but try doesn't mean anything. Don't try, do, you know. So when I do my meditation, I sit down for 5 minutes and I set the alarm and I listen to God. And I work to read 2 pages a day from the big book. And I read so much outside literature. Anything that was better than what my head was telling me. Anything. You know? And I'm working on the prayer meditation. One of my sponsors now is really big on that, and it's good. He's pushing me to do it, you know? I was fortunate that my dad being a minister, like I grew up talking a lot about philosophy with him. But I think for me, God was with me even before program. You know, like I went to orientation my freshman year of college, and when I was on the train back to my grandparents' house, the woman I happened to sit next to was the financial aid counselor at the office, and she said, "Give me your social security number." I'm like, "I'm not going to give you my social security number." But I did. She got me a job at the financial aid office, and I left school with 1 year of loans rather than 4 because I worked there and they knew me, and like I knew, I was like, "This is too good to be true," you know? Like life was so bad that I needed to believe. I had to see some good somewhere, you know? So, like, I kind of always, there was that sense of something. And I think this program cemented it for me. Like, for me, I look at these steps, and it frames everything for me. Because it's so simple. It's not doctrine. It's not Jesus or Buddha or this. It's just a power greater than myself. You know? If I'm concentrating on a chair, I'm not concentrating on my problems. You know? That's, if that makes sense. Oh yeah, what's my experience with step 2 and 3?
Yeah,
but not before. Yeah, sorry.
When you have to make amends now, matters how you do it
promptly and without regret. I usually talk to my sponsor first. If it's something that I really have to clean up, it's like, okay, I really screwed up here. What do I need to do? Oh, we'll talk after.